ready. It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
It's the 112th episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Happy holidays, and I'm glad you're listening. This week I've got two great interviews. The first with Chris Doc Wyatt, one of the folks behind Suicide Lane, a great Kickstart comic that I really enjoy that was recently released. Then the second interview features the return of Jeff Kaufman, whose latest endeavor is Angel Falling, a great comic that I got to read a while back and you can still purchase. Both creators talk about what they're working on currently, as well as projects they've done recently, so I'm sure you're going to enjoy it. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. I want to welcome to the podcast Chris Doc Wyatt, one of the folks working on Suicide Lane, a book from Kickstart, one of my favorite companies. And how are you doing today, Doc?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it, Wayne.
It's good to talk with you. I have been a longtime fan of Kickstart, and I enjoy the book so much, and I'm glad you're getting to work on one of them. Do you want to give us kind of a TV guide version of what the story is about?
Well, yeah, absolutely. It was conceived by the actress Alexa Vega, and it's about a character that's, a little bit like her, but is a killer, which Alexa is not, insofar as I'm aware. But basically, it's about Lane Ramirez, she's a young lady. She's very young. She's in her early 20s, but she is a racer on the motocross circuit and is doing exceptionally well, despite being the only woman in her league. But that's her day job, her kind of cover for her other activities, where she's a vigilante by night that goes by the name Suicide, a bike-riding vigilante who has a revenge mission to get the people that killed her undercover DEA agent father. She's got a support team that both serves as her racing team on the racing circuit and also her support team, for her vigilante adventures, too.
Mm-hmm. I got a chance to read the first chapter, as I was saying, and I liked it a lot. There's lots of action involved with it, which I enjoy. And I have to say, it's always a pleasure to me to see not only a woman be the main character, but also to be a Hispanic woman to be in a comic book, because diversity in comics is so hard to come by. So I was really pleased when I got to read that and see what the story was about. Did the actress want that to happen? I mean, how did that come to be?
Well, no, I agree with you. I think the diversity of the book is a cool thing about it, but that wasn't really on Alexa's mind. She actually first conceived of this character and created this world as she was when she was a little girl. She was a girl in the Robert Rodriguez's Spy Kids movies. She the first three, she was the star of the first three and was the sort of older mentor character in the fourth one. And she was on set and between breaks. I mean, she was, as you would imagine, a little kid on set with Robert Rodriguez, her imagination was fired up and she started creating her own stuff. And she created this vigilante female motorcycle racer character and, showed it to Robert. And he told her, look, this is awesome. Keep this in a box. Turned out that a lot of the things from the Spy Kids movies actually had come to Robert when he was a kid, and he kept all of his notebooks from when he was a kid, and he told her that he sort of goes through them every once in a while to find ideas that he'd sort of put in there. And so she did. She put it in a box, notebook in a box, and uncovered it, years and years later, and said, hey, this would actually be a pretty good idea for a comic. And that's when we started working together on it.
Okay. How did you get involved? I mean, do you know her?
Yeah, Alexa and I are friends. I'm an independent film producer, and I first met her on a project called Broken Hill that we shot on location in the Australian Outback. And so we worked together in Australia and just sort of, became friends. you know, I've been sort of working in publishing and in comics as well. And so when she had a comic book idea, she thought to call me. I'm a big comic book nerd from way back. And so we started talking about it.
Well, cool. Because, you know, this story makes me think very much of a movie, and especially since she's an actress, I was thinking this could eventually turn into a film. Was that something you thought the comic maybe first and then maybe examine what it could possibly be a movie?
Well, yeah. I mean, originally it was just about telling the story. But yeah, as we got into it, we started thinking of it for television, and we're thinking of developing it for television. It was part of the reason we got this wonderful artist who'd worked on other Kickstart stuff named Tony Shasteen, and he's spectacular. And part of the reason we were so attracted to his stuff is because he's got this kind of realistic, photorealistic almost style. So he rendered the character to actually look a lot like Alexis. So we both had this comic that we were developing, and also some images that served, you know, for development purposes on a TV show.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to agree. The art is very strong, and it's very clear. Sometimes you buy comics, and you're never quite sure what's going on. But the nice thing about this book is that the artwork is very distinct, and you feel the action when it's happening. Like when she's riding the cycles, it's just great stuff. And, you know, even when they're flipping in the air, you can kind of feel that kind of action happening around it. So it really just pops off the page. I like it a lot.
Yeah, I can't say enough good things about Tony. I've never actually met him face-to-face. But every time a page would come in, pencils, and then inks, and then colors, I just wanted to, you know, light a candle at the altar of Tony. He's an amazing artist.
Mm-hmm. Now, is it Laney or is it Lane?
Suicide. Lane. The Suicide Lane is that center strip in the road that you can pull into if you want to take if you're going left or if you're pulling into the road and there's a lot of traffic, so you pull into the center lane to avoid the traffic. It's called some people call that the suicide lane because if you take that, you might be risking damage to yourself or your vehicle. But we spelled it Layne because her name was Lane, and the idea was that she picked it, you know, to be clever.
Mm. On one of the pages, and the reason this is why I'm asking is that it looks like they're saying the crowd's chanting Layne, Layne. And so I was just curious as to was it Lane or was it Layne or how is it actually pronounced? Because one of the terrible things about comics is you can never find out how things are supposed to be pronounced. You have to sort of fumble along until you finally hear somebody actually pronounce the names.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. My growing up, I thought Thor's hammer Mjolnir was pronounced Mjolnir. I know exactly what you mean. Yeah. It's meant to be Lane. I think the idea from the person lettering the book was that was, how crowds can kind of break up a chant, you know, that it was Lane, like that. But
Okay. That makes more sense because I was going like, is it Laney or what? And that's important to know because I just couldn't understand why it would be Laney, but that's what they were seen to be saying. But one of the things I really like too about the character is that she is not too maternal in her perspective. A lot of times when there are women who read comic books, they want the lead female to be very maternal, to sit down and talk out people's problems and things like that. And Lane is not that kind of a person. I've always felt that limited female characters on the screen, if they had to be that way. I like that women can be all kinds of different people. It's just like guys. Guys can be scientists or football players or all kinds of people. But it often seems to me that women get shafted on that. They always have to be the maternal, kindly, patting people on the head person. But Lane is nowhere near that. And that's one of the things I really enjoyed about that. When I saw that she was much more of a diverse character as far as women goes, I was thinking, man, I like that a lot. That's great.
Well, I'm so glad you feel that way. Yeah, that's a lot of what Alexa brings to the table.
Yeah, it's so sharp that it works that way. So I'm just kind of curious as to, in the first chapter, we get to see several developing things happen, and I really liked it. And I don't want to give away the end, but there's one part where they discover something that reveals what's probably going to happen in the next several chapters, having to do with who's responsible for what's happened to the Lane's friends and family.
Yeah, well, I don't want to give anything away either, but hopefully there are a couple of surprises along the way, and hopefully we get to take people in a couple directions and to a couple locations that they wouldn't have expected from reading the first book.
Yeah, it's really good. Now, is this going to come out like a graphic novel, as the way that Kickstarter books often do?
Yeah, that's right. I'm not really in the room when they make their publishing decisions. But yeah, my understanding is there will be a trade. I don't know what size the trade will be published at, though, because a lot of the Kickstarter books are sort of digest sized, mm-hmm. but our monthly is, traditional comic size. So I'm not in the room when those decisions get made. But to be honest, either one sounds great to me.
I haven't seen Kickstarter do a monthly previously, so that's why I'm thinking graphic novel.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Your lips to God's ears.
Yeah, well, oftentimes what happens is they'll, if there's multiple chapters, what they'll do is they'll combine them all into the story, and we'll get, the book will have all the chapters in them. And I just think it's a wonderful thing when they do that. Another thing that Kickstarter always does that I really enjoy is usually you will have a self-contained story that by the time we get to the end of the story, we're getting to a place where it's clearly the conclusion of what's going on. It doesn't mean you couldn't have other stories, but the fact that it is so, it ties itself up on many levels by the end of it. And, that's so unusual in comics today, as you well know. You have to reset the book so that the book can continue on for ad nauseum. And now Kickstarter has done that. Are you going to continue that with this one, or have you written a certain number of books so far, and have you written something that resembles a conclusion for this?
Yeah, for 100%. It's a four-issue arc that doesn't, without giving it away, it doesn't preclude additional arcs. In fact, it kind of suggests a way in which there's another arc. But it itself has a beginning and a middle and an end in four chapters. And I also like that about Kickstarter's books. I mean, I think that they, their Kickstarter Entertainment is a transmedia company. They produce film and they produce television and they publish and they do digital things that are interesting. And so they have a lot going on. I think that because they're in that sort of multimedia mindset, they develop things with stories that have nice round shapes like movies and TV shows do. Mm-hmm. And that's something I enjoy. I mean, there's nothing worse than reading a great book that sort of never comes to a satisfying conclusion.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that happens early on in the book is we get to see Lane as a young girl, and she gets to see one of her family members, something bad happening to the family member. And I'm just kind of curious, was that your suggestion? Was that Alexa's suggestion? And obviously that's going to impact the character as she goes forward. Was that an important part of the story, or was that something that you two talked about and making happen?
No, that was in Alexa's original conception of the character. This is her sort of Batman moment. This is Lane's moment where Lane experiences tragedy, as heroes often do, that send them on their journeys. But the idea is that this is supposed to be a variation on the Batman mythology. Batman also sees family members killed at an early age, which sort of sends him on a hero arc. Lane does too, but she doesn't become a hero in the traditional sense. She's on the road for vengeance. And that kind of harkens back to, Westerns and, some spaghetti Westerns and, other sort of, and samurai movies, even like Kill Bill. The idea that this is someone who's on a revenge quest as opposed to a simple hero's quest, or I should say a more traditional hero's quest.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's kind of interesting to me. On that level, it reminds me of Jeff Johns did a book called Batman Earth One, I think it was. And Batman doesn't start out as a hero. He actually is looking for revenge as well. But as time goes along, he realizes there's a need for Batman beyond just his revenge. Is that kind of – I mean, if you were to do more of Suicide Lane, would you want to have her take on other cases and do things like that?
Yeah, I have to be careful about how much to say because we do have an ending at the end of the fourth issue. We have an ending that kind of sets up something, but I don't want to give it away. Let me say that whether it's Lane herself or whether it's the people around Lane, I think that they could be constrained into larger adventures.
Mm-hmm. Great. Yeah, don't get in trouble on my account. I always beg people, don't say something that'll get you in trouble, because I want to see more of this. I'm enjoying what I'm seeing, and I want to get more of that. Now, one of the sequences in the first chapter that I enjoyed was that she's done with the public, she goes back, and she's about to take a shower when she gets accosted by men in the room. And I guess now these days it's more multi-sex kind of stuff. You know, men and women kind of shower in the same area these days, it seems like. And she basically proves to them that she's not going to take that. And then the best part is when they're laying on the floor bloodied and stuff like that, she goes in and takes a shower like nothing ever happened.
We like the idea that one of the things about Lane is that she's beyond the ability to shock or – like there's basically nothing you could do to her to make her lose her cool, to make her question herself. She's already, in a certain sense, dead inside because of her backstory and because of what happened to her. And that's terrible for her because the book is written in a certain sense from a first person perspective, and we get some inner monologue with Lane, and she talks about the fact that she's got this darkness inside of her and she's sort of dead inside, and that's a negative. I mean, that means that she doesn't have much of a life, she doesn't have a very rich emotional life. But on the other hand, it means she's completely unflappable. It means you can attack her in circumstances where other people might feel very vulnerable, and she does not experience that vulnerability. She's beyond vulnerability. She is just she just reacts.
Well, it's a really great thing. I like about her is that she does that. It's very different. It's very different from how many female characters are. And what I also liked in the story is that we talked about one of her family members kind of going through a bad thing. That person gets replaced by one of the crew that helps her on both of these sides of her life. And I like the fact that she kind of looks at that person for advice, that she realizes that she may need somebody to be somebody who can give her better counsel than what she can come up with herself. And I really like that. I like the fact that she gets somebody who can help her, because a lot of times, you know, characters in the comics, they never have anybody they rely on. It's always they go out there and they're superheroic. But it was nice to see that she was human in that respect. Did you guys plan that from the start, or was that in her original notes?
Yeah, again, that was in Alexa's original notes. The idea that someone who loses a father at a young age often seeks a paternal figure, and that, you know, in Batman, in some versions of Batman, that's Alfred, you know. In other versions, it's not necessarily the relationship that they have, but you do see that, with Harry Potter, it's Professor Dumbledore, you know, like that idea that when you've lost someone at an early age, you're sort of, you know, searching for that kind of relationship in other relationships. You're trying to substitute it. And so the character you're referring to, his name is Donnie Archer, and he's a sort of an older dude who was good friends with her father and sort of raised her from the moment when she experienced her tragedy, and has become that sort of a substitute. It's sort of her only connection to human contact, in a way. As a side note, the character, Alexa conceived that character originally. It was in her notes from when she was a little girl. But the character is actually named after a fan of a Mexican film director named Jorge Ramirez, who made a movie called Maria Navajas Dos. And it's an FBI. There's an FBI character in that we borrowed the name of from a Mexican gangster movie.
Very cool. Now, there's another thing, and if you guys want to hold off on this one, we don't have to talk about it. But I'm fascinated by the tattoo business that happens with her. Is that something that you would rather hold until people read the book, or can you talk a little bit about that?
I can talk about that. The idea here is that she saw the number of people that were involved with her tragedy, and she's going to get them. And so she's got a list with five names on it, and she gets a tattoo for each one of the ones that each one of the men that she needs to avenge herself on. And so after complete, these men are sort of scattered all over. And so she's traveling, eliminating them one by one. Each time she's eliminated one of them, she gets a tattoo. So she's basically keeping a scorecard of her kills on her skin. And when we meet her at the beginning of the first issue, the one that you've read, when we meet her, she's gotten four of the five tattoos she needs to finish her mission, and she's looking for the fifth. And that's where we start the series.
Very cool. Very cool. I really like it. And of course, it gets to the end, and she's basically kicking butt and taking names of the first chapter, and I really like that a lot. And it goes so very strongly. I really enjoy the fact that she's got a supporting cast, including the guy that we talked about. Were you involved in the creation of the supporting cast, or was this something that Lex already had together? Because she's got a very interesting and varied supporting cast around her.
Yeah, we developed the cast together. That she had Donnie's character by another name was in the original notes. And then we worked on building out the rest of the team when we developed it for the comic.
Okay. Yeah, because I like that. It feels very real to me that she would gather these kind of people around her as she's doing things. So I really like that quite a lot. So really good stuff. Now, do you have a release date as to when this is going to hit the stores?
No, I'm so sorry. That's a Kickstart question. I don't.
Okay.
The publishing stuff I'm not clear on.
Okay, I'll find out, and I'll put it in here so people can go out looking for it. As far as like other projects and things go, I mean, obviously, as we talked a little bit before you started recording, this was actually your first comic, even though you have been reading them for a long time. What was it like to switch over and start to actually write comics instead of reading them?
Well, it was awesome. Yeah, it was incredible. Really, it was a personal milestone of mine. I have a writing partner named Kevin Burke, and we have gotten the wonderful opportunity to work on a lot of Marvel animated TV shows. We've written for Iron Man Armored Adventures, for Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes, for Ultimate Spider-Man, and now for the new show Marvel's Avengers Assemble, and for a couple of other shows, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Transformers Rescue Bots, a couple of other comic-based or comic-related shows. And that's amazing because I grew up on those comics and I read and collect those comics, to this day. I'm loving Hickman's run right now on Avengers, though it's very, very different from the show we write for. So in a lot of ways, I've been writing and playing in that comic book world professionally in the television arena. But to actually sit down and, to write, panel one, to write panel descriptions, was really kind of a personal milestone.
Cool. Was it easy to do for you since you have this background in animation and stuff like that, or did you find it hard?
No, I found the transition smooth. I feel like in a certain sense, sequential storytelling is the same whether it's in motion or not. I mean, obviously not everything's the same. There are things you can accomplish with a motion or with a gesture or with a look that you don't – that it's difficult to – sometimes manifest in terms of panel arrangements, but it's also liberating because, there's some things that you can hide between the panels that you can't necessarily hide when you're doing a TV scene, if you know what I mean. So right. There were, I guess, certain storytelling modes to adapt to, but overall, I feel like, you know, in a certain sense, I've been researching to write a comic book, you know, for the last 25 years of my life.
Now, I got to ask you, because, you know, this is your first experience on this side of the page. What was it like when you got the first pages back, when you saw your script being turned into artwork?
Yeah, I nearly cried. It was amazing, especially Tony's art, because Tony's art was he'd done a book called Witch for Kickstarter, which was fantastic. It was both fantastic because it was well written and also fantastic because of Tony's art. And so I knew to have high expectations, but then the first pages that I saw were the first, it was the two page spread. There's a double splash page that are pages 2 and 3 of the book. And, it was so beyond anything I'd even seen in my head, even knowing Tony that was going to be drawing it, that, I nearly broke down and cried. I ran in and showed it to my wife and, you know, got super excited and, you know.
Coolness. Now, I don't know if you know or not, what happened when Alexa got to see the first page?
I wasn't with her. She was on set. Okay. So she shoots a lot. I mean, she's doing a lot of projects right now. And if I remember right, what set was she on? I think she was on the Sin City 2 set. And so I would get texts. I get a lot of texts from her. And the texts were filled with LOLs and exclamation points and excited smiley faces. So I think her experience was a very positive one.
Very cool, very cool. Because it's a nice thing to start out this way and begin your comics career doing this kind of stuff. Because, you know, the printed page is a little different than the animation on television or in movies. And it's got much more of a dynamic feel to it because you can do these kinds of things in comics. And I know that's one of the reasons why probably you and I have the same expression is as far as going like with comics. It's wonderful stuff to see the printed page, and just kind of, as Frank Miller said when he read the Batman for the first time, he said, I opened the book and I fell in.
Well, that's a good way of putting it, yeah.
Yeah, that was kind of what I've had too. So I guess since you've done this, and you mentioned to me a little earlier before we were recording that you might have other projects as far as comics goes in the works. Can you tell us a little bit about what other things you're working on?
You know what? I do not know what I can say. I've got two books that are in the scripts stage with two other publishers. I don't know, honestly, what's been announced or what I'm allowed to say, but one of them will kick off at Free Comic Book Day this year. Which will be fun, a lot of fun, really cool. So I'll have a Free Comic Book Day book out, and it'll be a full, 22-page book. Sometimes on Free Comic Book Day, you get like, 5 or 6 pages and then the rest are ads or something. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Or reprint 5 or 6 original pages and some reprint pages or something. But this will be a full 22-page, fully original, fully free book for Free Comic Book Day. I'm excited about that. And then I got something else that's with luck and with printers' schedules being aligned, is supposed to be debuting at Comic-Con 2014.
Ooh, oh, wow.
San Diego.
Well, you're starting at the top, man. That's great.
It's fun stuff. It's cool.
Great stuff. Now, I'm glad that you're continuing on with it, because what I've read of this, the first chapter of Suicide Lane, it's great fun, and you balance character as action real well, the two of you do. Some comics don't do that very well. You know, you don't care about the character, so what happens doesn't mean anything. Sorry. But I think you guys do a great job with that. It really works out superbly well. And by the end of the first chapter, I'm sitting there going, now what? Now what? I got to get this book.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear you say that. Thank you. That's very nice of you. Well, I have to put that character balance, I think, comes down to Alexa, really. She's, she's a very skilled actress, and when you're a skilled actress, what you're really doing is, thinking all the time about your character and what your character's doing and what motivates your character and having to inhabit that character, which is something Alexa has done very well, and so it makes sense that she brings that in to her writing, and that she brings that into her creative process when she's, you know, in aspects other than acting.
Very cool. Well, it's a great book. I enjoyed the first chapter, and I'm dying to see the rest. So what I'm going to do is I'll keep my ear to the ground, and as soon as it comes out, boy, I'll be after it, because I really like the book. But it started off really, really strongly, and I can't wait to see how it concludes. So
thank you.
Good
so
job
much.
On
I appreciate that, Wayne. Thank you.
Yeah. So I hope that you and Alexa have a lot of good fun doing things in the future. I'm sure you've got other projects you'd like to do. And, you know, have fun with animation. And I'll keep an eye out for your name. I do have to ask, because I called you Doc, so people know that, that why you're being called that. Is there a reason why you go by the name Doc?
Oh, yeah. My name's Chris Wyatt, but there are a lot of Chris Wyatts in the world. The CEO of Blockbuster is Chris Wyatt, and there's a guy down at Riot Games in Santa Monica named Chris Wyatt, and there's a Welsh Union rugby player named Chris Wyatt, and the guy that edited This Is England, that great movie This Is England, is named Chris Wyatt. So there's tons of Chris Wyatts. On IMDb, I'm Chris Wyatt 4 of, I think, like 12. So Doc was a nickname from grad school at USC. My friends at school called me, so I stuck with it professionally to differentiate myself from the other Chris's.
That makes sense. Well, I'm going to keep my eyes out for the other work that you're doing, including on animation, because Avengers Assembles on Sunday mornings on Disney XD, and Hulk Agents of Smash as well as Ultimate Spider-Man. I'm going to have to go back and see which ones you've done.
I appreciate it. Yeah, like old seasons are on Netflix now. So, Earth's Mightiest Heroes and Iron Man Armored Adventures are both on Netflix, and Ultimate Spider-Man, I think, is too now, I believe.
Oh, cool. Well, much success, Doc. I hope that things go very well, and maybe if we're lucky, we'll get to see this turned into a TV show or a movie, and Suicide Lane will turn into an ongoing show. I'd love to see that.
Oh, that'd be fantastic. Let's hope so. By the way, I should mention that digital book is out through iTunes, or iBook, I guess, and a few other sources. So it's a 99-cent download on a couple of different ebook services. So digitally is a great way to get the book.
Is that a first chapter or is that the whole book?
No, it's issue one, the one that you've got in print. It's already out digitally, and it's cheaper that way.
Yeah, you know, DC does.
And Tony's art looks great on the screen, on a nice digital screen.
You know, DC does that. You get to double dip that way. You get to pay 99 cents to see it, and if you really like it, then you go out and buy the paper copy when it comes out, so you have one that you can keep for yourself
as a legacy
collection.
Copy. Yeah.
Yeah, I do that all the time, so I'm looking forward to that. I can't wait to see this stuff. But, man, Chris, you're doing a great job. I really hope that we get to see a lot more of Suicide Lane. And, man, I'll be after this book.
Oh, I appreciate that, Wayne. Thank you so much for your support.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol...
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
I want to welcome back to the podcast Jeff Kaufman, creator of such wonderful things as Terminal Alice and Whore, and he's got a book that came out recently that we want to talk about called Angel Falling. How are you doing today, Jeff?
You know, it's funny. I haven't talked to you in about a year, so it's a little weird that you and I only get to talk like once a year.
Yeah. Well, you need to put out more books, I guess.
I guess I have to.
Yeah. Well, why don't we go ahead and jump right into Angel Falling, because that's out, and I got a chance to read it. And I just want you to talk about that. Give us kind of the TV guide version of what Angel Falling is all about.
Well, Angel Falling was a really tough book because it's following a book, you know, Whore, which was about a guy who does anything for money. and it was a pretty controversial book, and people, you know, went a little crazy over it. And my feeling is my next book always has to be better than my last. So actually trying to beat that book is, you know, it's impossible. So you have to just change direction. And what I did in this book was I did. You know, while all my books have mysteries, this book is about a woman who wakes up in an alley. No clue who she is, but she's one of the most deadly people on the planet. And she's been watched over by a 17-year-old kid with autism who has physical photo memory, which makes him even more deadly than she is. He knows where they're from, but doesn't want to tell her because he doesn't want to go back.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And she ends up being called Angel, which I think is kind of, hence the title of the book. And she's kind of interesting. She's very much of an action heroine, but the funny thing is she doesn't know how she got to be all the skilled in all these things.
You know, that's the tough thing about this book, because from the normally you figure out by the end of my books that I'm screwing with you. But this book, I start off on page one. You know, I stick this woman half naked in an alley, and she has no clue who she is, and that's... That was the fun thing, and they call her Angel because she has these angel wings tattooed on her back. And Connor touches her back. That's the 17-year-old kid touches her back and says, Angel. And, you know, that's how she winds up being called that. It was a fun book to write.
Now, we should talk about Connor some, too, because he has a special part in your writing and in your life experience. So why don't you go tell people about Connor?
Well, Connor Jacobs is, like I said, a 17-year-old autistic kid with physical photo memory. For the last, I guess, 6 years, people have been asking me to include autism in my books because my son, Jacob Connor, is autistic. And I never felt like I wanted to do a book that, you know, I don't know, it felt like a charity book. Mm-hmm. So what basically happened was is I chose to do a book that, you know, where a character, you don't pity him. Where he's a very strong-natured character, in that, you know, you see his autism second in comparison to who he is as a character, which is very tough to do, but I think I pulled it off.
Mm-hmm. I think you did very well. I really felt for Connor as I was reading the book, and I just think it's such a great story because, as always, you always pick topics that nobody else is writing about. And I like that about this book. Just like horror was a very different comic from anything I've read, and I still haven't read anything like it. Angel Falling is very much that way, too, and it focuses largely on the relationship between Angel and Connor. She's frustrated with him sometimes, and he's frustrated with her sometimes. And I just found that, you know, because I found that a very real relationship because of those things.
You know, it's interesting because, you know, you grow up with the dream that someday you'll write Spider-Man. And I wind up writing these other stories. Now, I would love to write Spider-Man, but in the same breath, if I can't do Spider-Man or, let's say, Batman, you know, I'm going to write what I want to write. And I think doing something different in comparison to trying to redo a Spider-Man character, I mean, I've done that before with my earlier works where, you know, I was basically recreating the characters that already existed. Now, these characters, you know, might feel like some story that you've heard before or something, but they're all original ideas that I feel good about. And I think that's your goal should be to give somebody something. You know, if they want to buy Spider-Man, Spider-Man's out there. They can buy it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but if they want to buy something that's new and has a good feeling and has a good story and a rock star ending, then buy my book. I mean, that's exactly how I feel about it.
Well, I always like that because your stories, and oftentimes, you know, you do in a graphic novel format in which something has a beginning and an end. And if you're buying regular comics, you're never going to see an end because everything has to go on from month to month. Spider-Man and Batman have to come back next month, and somebody else might be writing them and drawing them, so you might have to do something entirely different. But with your books, you get to tell a complete story, and that is such a rare thing these days that I really like that a lot.
Yeah, I get to read a lot of graphic novels, and the worst critique that I got on this book was it felt like a DC book. And I was like laughing because I'm going, well, you know, I did have Kevin West, Mark McKinnon, and Tom Cho on the book. And this was a nice DC team. I guess it's unusual to do a graphic novel with, you know, three major professionals because most high-end professionals are doing single-issue comic books. And I was fortunate that they were able to fit it into their schedule.
Mm-hmm. See, I don't understand that because the story, I mean, you've got a half-naked girl walking around. DC's not going to do that. And then you've got an autistic 17-year-old. DC tends not to do that either. And then it comes to a conclusion of sorts at the end. And I don't get that. Now, I mean, when I read the book, it was just such a somewhere else to be, and I just was lost in it when I was reading it. That's one of the great things about your stories also is that it's very compelling, and it pulls everybody in. And so I don't get the DC comparison, except for the fact that these folks might have worked for DC. Other than that, I don't understand it.
I think when people think of graphic novels, they think of more in the lines of art books, catering to either like just complete violence or children. Mm-hmm. And I don't write like that. I've decided that that my style is what it is, and it's you know, I want you to be questioning yourself through the whole book, and I want you to get to the end, and I want you to feel like an idiot. Because I love when I get to the end of a book and I have no clue what happened. And I know in this book, I kicked you in the face at least 4 or 5 times in those last 10 pages.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so. And I feel bad for people who've read my past books because they think they're going to figure it out. They think they, you know, but I cater my books specifically for my past readers. So I go out of my way to screw with you. And I like doing that.
Well, that's the way it should be, honestly. If I know what's going to happen, what's the point in reading the book?
No.
You know, I waste my time. It's like watching a television show. When I watch TV shows and they tell me exact, and I can tell you what's going to happen in the last few minutes, I turn off the television because there's no point in that. Because if I know the end, why would I bother to waste my time watching the show?
It's comforting for some people to be able to know what's going to happen next. And I don't do it in a way that makes you hate the ending. I do it in a way that, you know, you go, wow, that was, I cannot believe I didn't figure that out. Mm-hmm. And that's the same with the end of this book. And this book was special because it's, you know, the main character is my boy Jacob. You know, mm-hmm. It's weird because, you know, Connor and Jacob are not the same people.
Right.
It's special to me because there's a scene where Connor is sitting next to this boy on a bus.
Mm-hmm.
And that boy on the bus is my son, Jacob. You know, when I look at it, it sometimes brings me to tears a little bit because I know maybe, you know, the chance of him ever understanding that panel of the comic book, well, you know, isn't going to be that good, but at least I'll understand.
Right. It's just because Connor is a very compelling character. He's got skills along the lines of Angel, and the two of them actually work well together as a team. But I just kind of find Connor is you know, the two of them are really interesting people to me. You know, you bring a life feeling to them. You know, they breathe when I'm reading the books, and you start to care about what happens to each of them. There's a part in the book, if I remember correctly, that where they split up. And you kind of wonder, are these people going to get back together again? What's going to happen? You know, I want to know what's going to happen next. And I think that is one of the best parts about the book, is that very soon into the book, we start to care about these people, and we wonder what's going to happen to them. And the end is a great ending, I just thought. I would never spoil it, but it's a great, great book. I really like the way that it ends, too.
Well, thank you. And I this book, to me, was hard in the sense that I didn't want to... I normally don't care about offending people, and it's because I don't intend to offend you. If you're offended because of something that I wrote, because I see things in life, and I want to, sometimes I want to put them in my stories. I don't go, okay, now I'm going to offend you by putting like a severed penis on the table. I mean, that's silly. You know, there's no point to that. You know, and I hear people say things. Well, you start off the book with her naked. I wanted to give you that first scene where you're uncomfortable from the moment we start.
Mm-hmm.
The thought is, it's like, wait a minute, this is, you know, the first page, I slap you. And I want to get going. I don't have time normally when I read to get a 30, 40 page build.
Mm-hmm.
And the comic books aren't meant supposed to be like that. They're supposed to be visual media. And I like to be able to give you that story as much as I can pack into a book. I'm going to do that. Until an editor tells me I can't do it, I think I'll keep doing it.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the great things at the very early part of the book is that she's confronted by people on the street. And right away, she's able to defend herself, but she doesn't know how. And so we're looking at her through her eyes, which I thought was kind of cool. You know, most people know what they're going to do, and they know that they know all this stuff already. But when she actually is able to defend herself, I thought, wow, that's different. I didn't expect that.
Well, when I look at things sometimes, for example, Kevin West is a fantastic artist. I love his style. I've always felt that you have to work well with your artist. It doesn't matter how great a writer you are or how great an artist you are. If the two people don't work together, you're going to get a book that doesn't make much sense. And I'm fortunate that Kevin West, I would send him some pictures and he would deliver. Every page he did exactly what I wanted to see. I can't say that I was any more fortunate. I love Angel in the sense that she does things in a certain way. I mean, imagine a life, and this is what it really is. imagine a life where you wake up and you know that you're this bad person. You know you used to be this bad person. You don't know why, but you have this great feeling that, you know, you were a terrible human being, and you have a chance to not go back to that person. Is it more important to remember or to go back? I think that people's human nature sometimes dictates, you know, what they do or don't do, and your experiences sometimes don't always make you who you are. Sometimes it's just, you know, your inner soul that defines who you are as a human being, not how you grew up.
See, sometimes I think comics are visually dazzling but mentally uninspiring. And to me, I like it when you work with an artist, it always feels to me like the two hinge together very well. And I have to say, I like, you know, Mr. West's art in there. It's very clear and very easily understood, which I don't find in a lot of graphic novels, to be honest with you. I pick it up and I start looking through it, and I can't even tell what it is he's drawing or he or she is drawing. And so, but your book is very clear what's happening, and there's a lot of pacing to it, and he and you work together real well to make that pacing happen and keep you interested in the book.
I was lucky because Mark McKenna actually put us together. You probably know Mark. He's a fantastic inker. He's done a lot. You know, he's been around forever. And the reason why a lot of art and a lot of graphic novels isn't that good is because the people putting these books out can't afford to use high-end artists. I don't ever want to do a book where the artwork is mediocre. You know, you may forgive me for a story, but you're never going to forgive the artwork. Because that's what comic books are. It's a visual medium. And if you're using artists who don't understand pacing and they don't understand paneling and they don't know how to make the right choices because they haven't drawn 100, 200, 400, 1,000 pages, you're going to get what you get. And the reader subconsciously knows there's something wrong, even if the art does look pretty.
The thing I also like, too, is the way that Connor is portrayed. And Angel, they have their very unique appearances. And yet, the way that they see each other, you know, is just so compelling to me. I just kind of – did you have somebody – obviously, Connor is your son, but who – is Angel anybody that you know? Did you actually, you know, make her somebody that you are familiar with?
What's funny is I came up with a character in basically the book because a good friend of mine, Claiborne Moore – was the artist from Moore Creations. It's just C.S. Moore. I've always dreamed that someday I would create a character that was worthy of one of his, you know, for him to actually sculpt. And I was thinking about I thought, okay, well, Blaze is a genius when it comes to women. So it's got to be a female character. And there has to be the defining thing on her. And I was thinking about Kabuki, and I was thinking of Billy Tucci. And the idea hit me. I go, wait a minute, what about angel wings? The first thing I did was Google. What about Angel Falling? No. What about Falling Angel? No, that's taken. What about, Angel Falling, the main character is Angel. And I Googled it, and it was available, and the website was available, and the Facebook was, so I realized this was the first time this title had ever been used, which is a very hard thing to do when you try to come up with a cute name for a book. And the minute that happened, I realized I had something, that the fates were calling to me to do this book. And that's the idea was just, and I didn't want to make her a blonde. So the idea of making her a tall brunette, kind of maybe a younger Jacqueline Smith kind of, would work. But make her a stronger face. And I think we got it.
Oh, I think so. I really like the character, and I really like the marriage of the visuals and the plot. It really works with her. And, you know, I have to say, you touched on something that is a thing that bothers me, is I don't understand why more comics don't center around women characters. I understand it's a male audience, mostly guys pick up, but there are a lot of women who buy comics. And to actually have this book's title character be a woman, I thought was a great. I was showing this to all the women that I know because I was going like, man, you ought to read this story. It's about a woman. And they were like, really? Comics don't have stories about women. I said, well, this one does.
Well, you have Wonder Woman, for example, or Batwoman. You know, those are the two, or Miss Marvel. And I don't think it's funny because they don't allow men to write these books because they believe that men don't have the ability to empathize with women, female characters. I want a strong character. You know, yes, I have her half naked at the first page, but she kicks the crap out of people. You don't feel bad for my characters. And from the beginning, I always felt my female characters were always a lot stronger than my male characters because, in my mind, I don't want to let people down. Mm-hmm. And that's why Angel works. Angel is, there are times that she does some stupid things. Mm-hmm. But in the end, I can't imagine that any woman would look at this booking other than to say, well, there's some gratuitous kind of cheesy stuff in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, you know, which you have to do, people mm-hmm. can say what they want, but you have to give the readers what they want sometimes. So you have to give men a good-looking female character,
mm-hmm.
and you give the personality for my women readers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was reading this thing about Batwoman, about how people had an issue. The writing team was upset or something, and people were upset because, you know, they wanted to get Batwoman to get married and all that mm-hmm. stuff. And I understand. I understand, you know, a writer has a vision, but you don't own the character.
Mm-hmm.
If it's your character, you can do what you want with it. But if it's, you know, if the company says, listen, we don't want to get married because we want her to be a free agent. Be the same reason mm-hmm. why we don't want Bruce Wayne to get married.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I could live with that.
Mm-hmm.
I would write the hell out of Batwoman. I would love to write about a gay character. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, so that people could actually feel and see exactly the way I would look at a character like that.
Mm-hmm.
It would be fun for me.
Now, another thing I think that Angel does is she breaks what I consider to be a stereotype. A lot of the women that I know that are interested in science fiction and comics and things like that, they always say that a lead woman character has to behave a certain way. She has to be willing to sit down and talk out her problems. She has to be maternal in nature. She has to be all these things. And I've always said to people, I said, but don't you understand that you're pigeonholing that character? You're saying a woman lead character can only be one way. Men can be scoundrels and men can be scientists and stupid and all other things. But women have to be stuck in that one little hole. And so one of the things I liked about Angel is that she's not stuck in that little hole. She is a lead character who is something that is outside of that stereotype, and I really like that.
You see, the thing about people is, even me earlier on in my career, my ability to empathize with characters was, while I could feel for them, I really didn't really think who they were. I mean, Angel and her past has killed a ridiculous amount of people. Now, the amount of desensitizing that happens to a human being after you take so many lives has to eventually affect you. Mm. And that's what I loved about Angel. Angel doesn't, you know, the idea of her being this cookie-cutter character never worked for me. The same with Connor. Mm-hmm. I want you to see these characters and believe that they exist, even though they're two-dimensional.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if I don't sell you on that, or you at one time you go, ah, really? Really? I mean, mm-hmm. I'm watching, for example, Person of Interest. And I see they're mm-hmm. trying to make this one character, this really tough character, and then they give her some cheesy lines. And I'm mm-hmm. going, she would never use this cheesy line. Why? Because she doesn't have to.
Mm-hmm.
She can say whatever she wants and not care about the result, because what are you going to do? Mm-hmm. She'll put a bullet in you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she doesn't have to come up with a stupid line. She can say something smart and intelligent without it coming off, you know, cheesecakey.
Right, right.
That's the way I look at it sometimes.
Well, that's why one of the things I really love, as soon as I start reading it, I start saying, okay, here's a woman that I can say, here's a real live woman, you know, because women in real life aren't all maternal and they aren't all this way. And so to see, and you know, right away she jumped off the page at me, because this was somebody who could be very real instead of just this fantasy, I think it is. There are some women that way, but I don't think that many women are that way anymore. I think most of them they're working and they're doing and managing home and work at the same time and stuff. They've got to be a little more, you know, a little stronger than somebody who doesn't, you know, who is that maternal. You know, she does have sympathy for people, Angel does, but if she needs to kick butt, she does that, and I really like that.
You know, I'll talk to you after we get off, because I don't want to spoil the ending for people, because they're, you know, you're really going to see the relationships at the end, especially.
Mm-hmm.
I look at Angel as you can be feminine.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that maternal and feminine, you know, that women aren't, the average woman, there's some women who will have that maternal instinct. Think of someone who'll kill your car.
Mm-hmm.
it's just a very silly thing, and I think you have to open yourself up to the idea that, I mean, Wonder Woman, for example, the reason why they say Wonder Woman won't make it, can't, the execs and everyone else say, you know, Wonder Woman's a tough television show,
right,
or a tough movie. And it's true, because mm-hmm. the average woman, whether she likes it or not, is not going to buy a woman walking around in a one-piece bathing suit. It's just it's the costume, and then you, when you alter the costume, everyone gets pissed at you. I mean, look how hard they go out of their way to. I mean, like when they put Robin in the comic in a movie, it's funny because those pants look silly.
Yeah, yeah.
And so does the Wonder Woman costume with the bathing suit. You can't see an Amazon woman walking around fighting crime in a one piece.
Right, right.
It's just the way it works.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, what I'm happy about is that Angel breaks a bunch of these stereotypes, which just – it always makes me mad when I see that in a comic. You know, they need to be breaking stereotypes and changing things and expanding our perception, especially women. I just think that Angel Falling does a wonderful job of that. And I was happy to read that. When I got done with that, I was like, yeah, that's the way that women ought to – at least some women ought to be portrayed that way. So –
It's a weird thing when people talk about women, and I'm not a woman. I don't know what they suffer with. I've had many relationships, but I try to empathize with who I'm writing, and I think women characters should just be as strong as women. Don't take a man and put breasts on her. There has to be more to it than that. But I'm getting better at it.
Well, I think so. I really identified with her, and I really liked her. And that was one of the things I hope going forward, I hope more writers get to read this and see that you don't have to do a certain thing with a woman, that you can actually make her something, not to be punny, but broader in perspective, that they can do things, you know, that you don't expect, because most women are not very surprising or very interesting, I hate to say it, in comics. But this one, Angel, interested me right off the bat, so I hope that more people do that.
Well, thanks, Glenn. I appreciate it. It's nice to know, you know, when people – get what I'm trying to do. And, you know, some people are just entertained, which works for me too.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have a habit, I know, of when you write a book, you bring a character from a previous book that you've done in there, and that happens in Angel Falling as well.
Yeah, that was hard. In this book, it was harder. And I don't want to spoil it, but Jacob Mars from Horror is actually in this book. And to have, and it, that was probably one of the hardest things to write because well, I'm not going to spoil it, but I have to have him do something that he wouldn't do, it was a very tough thing for me to work through, which I think it played off perfect. You know, especially for the people who have read, you know, Horror, you know, you don't have to read the last book to like it, but it's a little gift to readers because if I don't do sequels.
Well, it's like when I watch Arrow on the CW. If somebody doesn't know that Mike Grell drew, Green Arrow in the comics, it doesn't matter to you that they call it Judge Grell, you know. And,
right.
But for those of us who know that, it's a nice little Easter egg that we go, oh, Judge Grell, I get that, you know. So that's the kind of things that you're doing with your book, is you're giving those of us who have been around for a while.
Pretty big Easter egg.
But people don't get that. I mean, I talk to people who don't read the comics, and they go, Judge Grell, what difference does that make? And I said, oh, okay, you don't know. And then I explain it to them, and they go, oh, well, I didn't know that. And I said, well, yeah, obviously. But for those of us that do, it's fun to see those things. And that's kind of thing. One of your things in your books is as you go along, we get to see these characters pop up in the other situations. And it's a neat thing to do because, you know, I'd like to see Horror again, that character. Yeah,
well, Fade to Black Studios optioned the rights to Horror. So they're trying to make it into a television show. And that would be, for me, there'd be a lot of vindication. They always ask me if I want to appear in it, if they make it a television show. I said, yeah, just for like little, you know, like the little Stanley moments. But I want to be showing my ass every time I'm on scene. So, you know, like I just scream Mars and he's like, who is this guy?
And they keep showing up.
And they're like, and the big joke is this, I'm not moving Mars. I'm moving all the people who gave me crap about the name. So it's, it's funny because it's true. All of us have an inner whore. We've always done something for money. Some of us have taken these terrible jobs for money. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in the end, it is what it is. And that's why I love that book. Could I write 1,000 copies of Horror? Yeah, all day long. I mean, Jacob Mars was a character I could write forever. He was just so easy. You could do the most insane things with him. Could I write Angel Falling forever? It's harder for me because I'm more attached to the character, which I could do sequels if I really wanted to. There was a lot of emotional pull off this book. And I think that's why a lot of people, you know, kind of connected with it.
Yeah, that's great. You feel what's happening to the people. Instead of you're being an observer, you're actually, you know, participating in what's going on emotionally. And that's always a great thing in a comic. I don't get that very often.
Well, I'm glad you did. I know there were some things that people were like, it's funny because everyone expects the one twist. They didn't expect to be slapped a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
That was the fun thing about this book. That was the only way I felt I could go over the top with a book like this. Is the ending had to have a couple good smacks where people go, wow, oh my.
Yeah.
That's
the whole point of reading, is to get smacked around. If I know what's going to happen, who cares? But I love nothing better than when a good surprise. And when I go back and look and say, okay, they foreshadowed this here, but I didn't realize it until we got to that. So that is a great writing in my mind. I love that so much. And I wish television was more like that. There's so much standard stuff.
If they let me write, you know, from what the guys are telling me, they want me to be involved in the writing, which I would love to be able to set a show where, you know, I do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm able to, you know, write these twist endings at the back of the books where people just go nuts when they go. Because I hate these stories where the easiest way to figure out the ending of a television show is when they have a pseudo celebrity in the background, like cut.
Oh, I know that.
And you're like, wait a second, I know this guy. He's like a big supporting character. And you know his job wasn't just to cut flowers. He killed somebody.
That's right. That's right. So many shows I've seen that. And movies, too.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't take that. I just can't take that.
But I think the average human being might enjoy that. And I think that's probably why they do it. Because there's some people find it comfortable when they know what's going to happen. I don't particularly like that. I feel it's cheap, but if that's what Hollywood wants, sometimes that's what they get.
But you know, they do. They constantly remake the same plots over and over and over in television shows and in movies, and then they wonder why people don't go to the movies or don't watch the television. Well, guess what? It's dull. Give us something interesting. Don't give us something that's the same old rehashed. You know, that's the important thing to me, and this is what I like about your books, and this is why I highly recommend Angel Falling. If somebody, by the way, wants to get a copy of Angel Falling, how do they get a hold of that now? Is it available digitally?
It won't be digital until January. It's available you can contact your comic book stores and they can order it if they don't have a copy. Amazon has copies. You can go to Barnes & Noble, have them order it, or you can go to our website at bigcitycomics.com and order a copy, and we'll send you out one there. I would rather people get them at comic book stores, but you know, sometimes it's store didn't order it. And if you can't get it from a comic book store, I will figure out a way for you to get a copy.
Okay. So the website, they can contact you that way?
Yeah, they can go to bigcitycomics.com or they can go to the Facebook page. We have a store on Facebook/BigCityComics. And I'll do whatever it takes to get the book into people's hands because I write them because I want people to read them. It's not about the money to me.
Right. Well, money is a real concern, though. How much does it cost normally?
The book is $9.99, which is that's a ridiculously cheap book. I like to call it two single issues for free. You can't get a 22 single page comic book for under $3.25 now. So I'm giving you 100 pages. I'm doing right by you.
Very nicely done. So I highly recommend it. It's called Angel Falling, and it's a graphic novel. It comes from Xenoscope Entertainment is the folks that are publishing it, although the Big City Comics studios are the ones that are producing it.
We produce it. What I do is I've had a relationship with Joe and Ralph over at Xenoscope for about 3 years now, and every June I give them the completed book. They send it to the printer. They do deal with Diamond Comics. They do it all. And then the book gets published. I never want to be the publisher again. I just want to produce books that, you know, I can respect. I don't screwing around with publishing. You know, the therapy I needed from those years is too much for me.
Okay. Now, we were talking a little bit before I started recording about that you have other projects coming. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that so we can be on the watch for those?
Well, it's kind of funny. I actually have a children's book called Chip and Goro coming out in about 3 months. It's about a stuffed bear and a stuffed gorilla who live on this boy's bed. And when he goes to school, they go to school. I just can't. It's a little weird for me because I've said this a couple times, but I can imagine the PR when people say, from the guy who brought you horror comes Chip and Goro. I just wanted to create something that my kids would be able to read. I have two 7-year-olds, and they'll be in there. They'll either be 13, 14, 15 before they can read anything else I've done. So doing a book that they can actually read is a privilege, and I had a fantastic artist in Elton Cintron who knocked out these paintings in about one painting every week and a half. So it took us about 6 months to get the artwork done on this book, but it's just fantastic. And that'll come out in about 3 months, and I'm really enjoying that. And I have two other graphic novels I'm working on right now. One is called New Jack, about kind of if you put Eureka and Buffy together. It's about a 22-year-old kid who's a deputy who handles all the supernatural stuff in a wildwood Louisiana. And the second book is a little tougher. It's a passion project I've been working, trying to get done for the better part of 6 years. It's called 9/11. It's kind of what you think, except it's my take on it. It's the idea that it's about a villain and a hero who both had people in the building, and see how they react and how a country reacts. It's a pretty strong book, and I don't think I could have had the strength to do that book a couple of years ago, because I would have been too concerned about how it came out. But I've been haunted by it, so I know I've got to get it done.
Well, I expect that to be another gripping book, because I think even this far out from it, we're still not over the 9/11 experience. So I'm going to be very interested to see how that goes. You may give me a new tradition of what to do on September 11th in the future. Sit down and read that book.
The funny thing is, these stories are all locked in my melon, and they don't go away. So it's funny. People say to me, well, is it written down? I said, no, it's up there. And it keeps all these different stories keep clawing to get out. And that's why doing the sequel to me is, you know, the sequel is not qual. It is fighting to get out. It's the book that I've been sitting on that I go, oh, I got to do it. And now I'm going to try to fit two in a year that I probably don't have enough time to fit one in.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because I have a couple of Star Trek scripts that a bunch of us had gotten together, and I wrote two of them. And the first one, when we wrote the last word down on the page, I felt this strange rush of feeling, like all of a sudden all this was out of me and onto the paper for the first time. And I was like, wow, that is a weird feeling, I said. But that's probably what you experience a lot. You probably get a lot of that when all of a sudden it's on the paper. It's a whole other experience than having it going around in your head.
You know, it's funny, but I don't know why my brain functions the way it does. You'd have to talk to my wife. I don't get that rush when I finish. I don't get that rush when I do it. It's not that I gave birth to something. It just feels like it needed to be told. And I need you to understand what I was trying to say. It's the weirdest thing, because when I talk to people about my books, like, it's always more important to me to be able to talk to you afterwards and discuss everything. Like, so you got that part, and what do you think of that? And it just feels like I needed to do it. I needed you to understand it. I wish it was easier for me to go, wow. Like, when people give me compliments on the book, it's very appreciative. I don't know how to take them, though. I'm terrible at taking a compliment, because I don't really know how to respond to it. I appreciate it. At the same time, I'm going, well, did you get it? Did the ending get you? I'm still wanting to know your reaction to it. Instead of it's 5 stars. Okay, 5 stars. But what did you get the scene? It is a weird thing with me. And someday I'll get comfortable with it. Who knows?
Well, the thing that interests me, of course, you have to, when you write the story, then you've got to deal with the art, and then you've got to deal with the publishing, and then it gets to the stores and all this kind of stuff. So you have a more involved process than what I went through. All I was trying to do was get on the paper. Once we got it to the paper, I mean, this story had been floating around in my head for like 2-3 years. And finally, when it hit the last word hit the paper, it was just an odd experience for me. So, well,
it's a
I'm glad that...
It's a relief a lot of times, and I see people, writers who do that. I'm trying to fit so much into such a small life that I just want to get it out. And I don't know. I know those people who are fortunate to be able to, that's all they do is write. I have a lot of respect for that, because it's a weird dream to be able to know that what you're doing today, well, I'm writing today. That's all I've got today. Well, really? And it's not that there's, I don't put that down. I just can't imagine that could be my existence, especially, let's say, they make a television show. They go, well, he's scripting, he's doing this stuff, but I know I'm going to be fighting to get so many of these different things in. I mean, I think a life is meant to be lived, and that requires you to try to do as much as you can. And writing is just part of what I do, but it is so important to me to get done.
One last question on Angel Fallen, and I'll let you get back to real life. What's been the reaction from people who have talked to you about the book after you? You were mentioning a little bit about you wanted to know how people got the ending and stuff like that. What's been the reaction that people who have read the comic have given you? What have they told you?
You got to understand, I was really scared on this book. I was really, and that's weird for me to say to people because they don't understand it. But when you put like a year of your life into something and you depart so strongly from the book before, that your fear is that people are going to turn on you. They want what you did before so badly that they're not going to care or like or respect what you did. And I got the exact opposite. You know, this book had no swearing and no sex. And people just seemed to, you know, Horror got a ridiculous reaction, but people seem to love Angel Falling. They come to me, they talk, oh, God, I loved Horror, and Terminal House was good. So it's funny, the Terminal House was good. But I loved Horror, but this book, this was something else. And I'm like, oh, wow, you know, that was good, good. Then I know that I can, whatever I do next, you know, that my choices, I'm making the right choices, and I, you know, my stories aren't limited to, you know, penis and fart jokes.
Well, keep up the good work, because all the books of yours that I've read have been great fun and definitely worth the shekels to put down to get. So if people out there have not yet gotten Angel Fallen, go to your local comic stores and get them there. And if you need to approach Jeff, go right ahead and do it. I highly recommend it. It's such a great book. You will be engrossed in it once you get started, like I was, until you get to the end. So, Jeff, it's good to talk with you. You know, much success going forward. I can't wait to read your new stuff coming.
Oh, thanks, Wayne. It's always good to talk to you, even though it's only once a year.
Yeah, well, we'll have to do something about that.
Well, I'm at a lot of conventions, and I do drink a lot, but okay.
Okay. And now it's time for my yearly holiday tradition, the playing of 'Twas the Dark Night Before Christmas. This video is actually available on YouTube. If you go to that site and look up 'Twas the Dark Night Before Christmas, you'll find it there. It's from the folks who do I'm a Marvel and I'm a DC kind of videos, and there are plenty of them. I think this is one of their first ones. What you really need to know is that there are three voices. The first one is Alfred, second one, of course, is Batman, and the third one is Santa Claus. And it has an interesting holiday message that I like to communicate. So without any further ado, 'Twas the Dark Night Before Christmas.
'Twas the night before Christmas, and all through Wayne Manor, not a sound could be heard, especially not laughter. There were no stockings hung and no tree filled with lights, not a single Christmas decoration in sight. Master Bruce in his costume, and I in my robe, were up late on the lookout for evils unknown. I missed Christmas, but he said he didn't have time. None at all ever since the tender age of 9. It saddened me watching him year after year, never taking in joy, only dealing out fear.
I say, sir,
I pleaded with all of my might.
Master Grayson is having a party tonight. Master Drake and Ms. Gordon are sure to be there. Why not leave this bleak cave and enjoy some fresh air?
I've outgrown Christmas, Alfred,
he answered each year.
You can go if you want to, but I'm needed here.
I sighed and walked upstairs to turn off the lights.
Merry Christmas,
I said. His reply was,
good night.
I walked up to my bedroom, got under my sheets, and prepared to drift off into sweet, peaceful sleep.
Suddenly, a noise woke me up with such a clatter, I ran to my window for more on the matter. And what should my wandering eyes happen to find but a man in a sleigh with 8 reindeer... No, 9! I was off to tell Master Bruce what I had spied. The fat man in the sleigh was in for a surprise. But it was my surprise. He had beaten me there. Just how fast was this man who could sled through the air?
Who are you?
Master Bruce yelled, demanding to know. The fat man's belly shook as he laughed.
Oh, don't Don't you know?
He asked, giving his heels a click.
Santa Claus, Father Christmas, Kris Kringle, Saint Nick.
The Batman moved slowly, not wanting to harm him.
Right, Santa. Let me take you back home to Arkham.
But the man disappeared. He was gone in a flash, leaving only some traces of old soot and ash. Suddenly, he was back just as soon as he left. This man was indeed quite fast in spite of his heft.
I've come here in peace,
said the man.
Have no fear,
Batman said.
Then explain to me why you've come here.
The jolly man laughed.
Christmas time is at hand. I bring gifts of joy to everyone in the land. The good people come to me with their requests for their heart's desire, and I do my best.
I need and want nothing from you,
Batman said.
Go and take to the streets of Gotham with your sled.
The man in red snickered and gave him a wink.
The person I'm here for is not who you think. I've no gift for you, though you've done much good, it's true. But the present I'm bringing tonight, well, is you. For when it comes to Christmas, you just disappear, and you leave behind all of the friends you hold dear.
Bruce said,
Hold on a minute now. That isn't true. I give plenty of presents at Christmas. I do. Gifts of cash, food, drink, clothes, anything I can find. So then how can you say that I leave them behind?
Giving gifts is something for which you've had a knack.
But the spirit of Christmas is still what you lack.
Your gifts are all sent, none given face to face, and you've never even accepted an embrace. If you're given a gift, you just turn it away, denying your friends what their hearts want to say.
I know all of their feelings, and they all know mine. Gifts are simply a symbol for which I've no time.
Well, Christmas is a time for which I've always felt. Allowing others in. Let your defenses melt.
My defenses are fine.
Batman furrowed his brow.
It's just a sign of weakness to let them go down.
Santa sighed.
I have never, as long as I've lived, had to teach 'tis better to receive than to give. I came here to open up your heart and your mind. You're determined to keep them both closed up, I find. You're just too filled with anger and pain and regret. Probably about both of your parents, I bet. You'd tell them you loved them if you could somehow, just like all of your friends want to tell you right now. Oh, the gift of allowing love to be expressed is one of the greatest gifts that one can get. For the past is behind us, the future unknown, and the moment is all that we have to call home. And so, now I leave you with this to think on.
And with that, this St. Nicholas fellow was gone. The master was silent. He was lost in thought. I wondered if this was what that fat man sought.
Alfred,
he said sharply, giving me a fright.
You mentioned something about a party tonight.
Soon we were dressed and ready and out on our way. Surely this was a miracle, one had to say. He had come bearing gifts and was going inside when he stopped to look up because he had spied that Santa Claus fellow,
I exclaimed in the dark. Master Bruce simply smiled, looked up, and said,
Thanks, Clark.
And I heard Batman say as he walked out of sight,
Merry Christmas to all. Well, at least for tonight.
May you enjoy whatever holidays you celebrate this year. So happy holidays. I'll be back next week with more interviews. But until then, keep reading your comics.